Welcome to the Inside Data Center podcast. I'm Andy Davis, and in this podcast, I will interview the people working in the data center sector and tell their stories. If you are working in the DC sector or you are looking to work in the sector, then this is a podcast for you. Welcome to the Inside Data Center podcast. Today, I'm joined by Martin Murphy, co-founder and partner at AMS Helix. Good morning, Martin.
Thanks, Andy. And glad to be here.
No, great to have you on. Obviously, keen to learn more about your career. You know, obviously, a very successful career within the industry, but also talk a lot more about AMS Helix and what your plans are, and just to cover a couple of the key topics in the sector. Before we start, do you just want to give a quick introduction of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, Martin Murphy, as you said, co-founder and partner at AMS Helix, so digital infrastructure company that hopes to just maybe disrupt the way we do things a little bit. So, you know, apply some technology and innovation and automation to the way things are done, whether it's in relation to design projects, you know, operational strategy. Just I feel the industry needs disruptors, and you know, well, Helix is kind of very focused on the customer and the outcome. We kind of hope to get there sometimes by, you know, a little bit of a kind of innovative route using technology and automation.
Well, as I always say, it is a tech sector, and tech sectors thrive on innovation and disruption, don't they? So it's good to hear.
Yeah, I use a phrase, you know, when I've done some panels and stuff at CBRE, we really need to take some of the magic that comes out of a data center and plug it back into how we operate it and, you know, build it, so to speak. So
no, definitely. And obviously go into that in a bit more detail. What I always like to do is go back to the start of your career. I noticed you studied electrical engineering at college, and I always ask, was engineering something you fell into, or you were always looking to move into a career like that?
No, I think even as a child at school, I was always breaking things and taking them apart, and engineering was something I was kind of destined to do. My parents kind of guided me down a path of, you know, get an apprenticeship, and then, you know, I always have something to fall back on, which when I think about that phrase now, I'm not sure they expected me to fall off at some point and go back. But I left school and went into a mechanical engineering apprenticeship. After that, I kind of felt a bit unfulfilled, like, is that it? So I took a year out, I went to America as a cultural exchange student. And when I came back, that's when I started studying electrical engineering. I went into the kind of power generation switchgear sector.
And how did you end up in the wonderful world of data centers? Was it an accident, like most people we talked to?
Kind of. I mean, I worked around a lot of critical infrastructure, you know, airports and radar stations and hospitals. And I remember clearly the first time I was in a data center, and it was like, oh, this looks pretty cool. And, you know, the guy was saying, oh, if we lost this, it would cost this many million. And I was like, this is pretty cool. I got offered the opportunity to talk to Orange Communications at the time. And it was just something that it didn't matter what they were paying me, whatever. It was like, yes, you know, I came in, and it was at the birth of digital networks, right? Orange were the first digital network. You know, we were growing rapidly, and it was, you know, it was 7 years of learning every day, you know, pacey, fun, fast. We had a network that was permanently in congestion, going from 1 million customers to two. It taught me everything I know today about, you know, a kind of data center, albeit it was a bit smaller scale than what we see going on today.
No, exactly. And that was kind of another point I wanted to touch on, really, like the evolution of the sector. Obviously, you've been in the sector for a number of years and developed your career to, you know, to a high level within the industry. But how do you think the industry's evolved, you know, throughout your career?
The scale obviously has evolved hugely, but it's not evolved as well as it could have in relation to talent, you know, attracting talent from other industries. I think, you know, up until a few years ago, we went through a real just recycle of talent through the industry, and that's not great because you don't get the diversity of thought from other people. So I think in the last few years it's been great to see, but you know, sadly, technology and innovation hasn't really moved on within the data center sector. We're still managing data centers the way we were 20, 25 years ago. You know, and as I said at the beginning, it needs some disruption to move forward and become more autonomous. If you look at the logistics center of today as opposed to the one 25 years ago, today's ones are, you know, robotic, autonomous, efficient, and actually we've still got engineers doing rounds and readings that, you know, take 2 hours and, you know, 5 kilometers. So we need to change.
Yeah. Do you think COVID, which is a word I keep saying I'm not going to say on this podcast anymore, but I always end up back at that point. Do you think that's increased the, the pressure on bringing in innovation and technology? Because at the point where, you know, remote working and, you know, remote commissioning or remote engineering was suddenly something that companies had to consider. So do you think that's actually brought forward maybe these conversations, as otherwise we'd probably still be in the same position we were 2 years ago?
100%. COVID has got a lot to answer for. Even me being in, you know, creating EMS Helix was reflection after COVID and how we do things. So without a doubt, COVID has helped drive just people to be open to new technology, new ways of doing things. I remember having a conversation, you know, with the head of a large colocation company sort of middle of last year, and he said, we're talking about technology and, you know, kind of how we put automation in a data center to provide predictability and more reliability. And we started talking about incidents, and he said, so the Q2 of 2020, he had seen a more than 50% reduction in incidents in the data center. And he said, the only thing we've done is stop people coming to site, and we've carried out nothing but the critical maintenance. So he's saying, like, I'm asking my engineering team, should we be doing less maintenance? And they're like, no, no, no. And I'm like, yes, 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 but in a controlled kind of manner. So, you know, when people at C-suite level see results then like that, then they, you know, they are going to start questioning, you know, engineering teams to be open to new ways of doing things, without a doubt.
Yeah, you've got to analyse, haven't you, what's happened and why it's happened, and then look at what you can implement to basically carry that on or improve it, I guess, improve it going forward as well. Another point I wanted to touch on with yourself, just before we move on to AMS, is just to kind of, obviously you've worked your way to quite a senior level, and I know, I'm sure there's people listening to this who have aspirations to get to the level that you found yourself at. What advice would you give to anyone that's looking to develop their career to quite a senior level within the sector?
Be, you know, be collaborative, be open to learning new things, you know, be supportive to your colleagues around you. And, you know, it sounds tough, but you need to find yourself in a place where you're valued, right? I mean, I've seen some amazing people who work for less amazing people, and they don't ever get truly valued in the opportunity to go. So, you know, find yourself somebody who, you know, who values what you do and is, you know, as invested in your career as you are in your career. So, you know, never stop learning and asking questions and, you know, challenging leadership. You know, everybody who's joining Helix, which seems to be like 2 or 3 a week right now, I'm giving them a message to, you know, to challenge me and the leadership team. We're hiring smart people so that they can help us and educate me and the team on the journey. So, but most of all, if you don't have you don't have a manager or a management team that value and respect what you bring, then you should look somewhere else. And I'm not saying somewhere else outside the industry, but you know, that's a message I give to anybody. Just find somebody who, you know, supports and values what you bring.
No, great advice. I think it's probably something that is undervalued in the industry or in the world of work, to be totally honest. You know, the importance of those relationships and collaboration is a massive one where, you know, if you feel you've got input and you feel you can actually make a difference, you're much more likely to continue your career within that company. I think it's something that not a lot of organizations actually look at. Anyway, and that brings us on to AMS Helix, which obviously we touched on briefly at the start, that you know you've recently kind of formed it as a partnership, and you touched on why you're looking at or why you look to establish it. But do you want to go into a bit more detail about what your plans are and what you say and where you see yourself within the industry?
Yeah, you know, Helix has some lofty ambitions in time, and I think we're gonna walk before we can run. It was important, the kind of strategic alliance with AMS. So AMS have been in business for 25 years. They've delivered, you know, technical infrastructure all over the world. Worked for some of the largest, you know, companies in the UK and EMEA. So being able to harness that history, the people in AMS that, you know, sat on that side of the company has been amazing. AMS will continue to flourish. It's, you know, pursuing sort of PFI healthcare and doing exceptionally well. And, you know, we have the opportunity to, you know, take the history of the company, the individuals, and as I said earlier, create something that's different and special. And, you know, even, you know, when I look at how companies outsource, and that's one of the things I'd like Helix to do as well, is support the right kind of outsource. I would say, you know, from my experience, outsource partnerships are rarely happy ones. You know, I would say there's maybe 2 or 3 in every 10 that you would call a happy manager from an outsource perspective. I'd love to be in a position where I can help, you know, a company that wants to outsource and a company that wants to provide services to, you know, start at foundation level. You know, company A, who's buying the service, chooses a partner with the right culture, you know, the right capability. And Helix, you know, is the collaboration part in the middle that helps build a model that, you know, provides one company everything they want, the other company, you know, get to use, you know, all of their sweet spots that they can apply, and, you know, what comes out at the end is something that's fruitful for both organizations. So that's partly, you know, something I want Helix to do. Its history is very much in project management, whether that's, you know, client rep or on-site, you know, principal kind of delivery. I don't think we want to build data centers out of the ground at the moment.
Leave that to the others for now.
Yeah, there's enough people doing that. So it's more around strategy, around life cycle, you know, asset management, expansion. You know, one of the things that we hope to play a big part in is the evolution and rollout of the Edge network, which is, you know, will be strategically identifying current infrastructure, whether it's, you know, telco sites or other sites of that kind of size. You know, maybe 40, 50, 100 per country get identified, and, you know, Helix's job will be to, you know, go in and work out how we take, you know, a sort of single purpose site and dual purpose it by, you know, infrastructure upgrades and connectivity. So that's a big part of what we hope to be doing over the next few years.
Yeah, and Edge is one of those areas, isn't it? That, and again, I say this a lot, that not a lot of people understand, not a lot of people actually appreciate the significant scale of Edge that we're going to need to implement a lot of the technology that's coming forward. And I've spoken to a few sort of Edge developers in the States that you know, are looking at a similar type approach to you, you know, looking at that dual purpose. But where do you see Edge fitting in the market? Is it kind of specifically for more like implement innovations like automotive, you know, like the autonomous driving, or more remote working? Where do you see it sitting in the industry?
Everywhere. literally everywhere. So, you know, autonomous vehicles will play a big part. I think 5G is going to be integrated to it. Gaming is going to be a big part of it. Just, I think it's going to play a part in all of society. I think when you use your phone, you know, in future, for whether it's gaming or apps or whatever, you'll be hanging off an edge data center of some sort rather than going back. I think it's, from a consumer perspective, I think the hyperscalers will almost certainly have a part to play. And it will take some different shapes and forms. I mean, you know, you've seen a lot of companies that are enterprise organizations which are, you know, folding through their IT strategy into cloud and colocation and hybrid cloud and stuff. I think we're going to see some of that coming back on-prem, and, you know, that could be categorized as, you know, edge as well. So I think edge won't look like one thing and it won't have one consumer. I think it's going to pretty much, you know, quietly become part of the infrastructure that supports all of our lives every single day.
Yeah, exactly. I was reading a book with one of my daughters this week, and it had a red phone book in it, red phone box in it, just how old the book was. And I kind of thought to myself that in 10 years, that's probably going to be, you know, an edge data center in the background of this picture rather than a red phone box. But crazy how the evolution happens. But back to kind of Helix and that side of the conversation. But I'm finding at the moment that a lot of the developers are looking for organizations like yourselves as they expand, as they grow. They really want that closer relationship with a consultancy to be able to deliver the projects. And I guess that's where you see yourself fitting in, isn't it? That close relationship with the end client to be able to oversee their expansion.
Andy, that is exactly what we're all about, and it's exactly what I'm all about as well. You know, one of the, when you become the CEO of a $1 billion data center company like at CBRE, you find yourself like somewhat removed from some of those things. And, you know, they're the things that make me tick. They're the things that, you know, being close to the customer, delivering, adding value, getting a call that says, hey, Martin, I know this is not really what you do, but could you help us out here? And that's, you know, when everybody leans in, gets excited, you know, and at the end of it, you know, a customer, you know, gets his problem solved and you've been part of creating that solution. So that's what I'm about and that's what Helix is about.
No, I love to hear that. I had a conversation with a client the other day who called me, obviously in my space, and said, you know, Andy, can you help us with this? I don't think it's your, you know, your normal remit, but can you do it? And I said, to be honest with you, I struggle to say no. If I feel that, you know, if it's a client I work closely with and I feel that I can provide a solution, I like to go away and research and find and identify that solution. And it's similar, isn't it, in the industry that you work in. It's that challenge is what gets you going, I guess, and what kind of makes you develop your business, but also as an individual.
Yeah, and, you know, Helix is in its infancy in relation to some other organizations, how we've grown. You know, we have a great group of people and we've got a great pipeline for doing more. But, you know, when I was kind of founding Helix, I went to speak to some other like-minded, smaller type of organizations, you know, niche market space. They're, the quality of the product and service is the benchmark of what good looks like. And, you know, and I sat down and I explained what Helix was trying to do. You know, there's a slight overlap in what they do, but, you know, I had asked them, could we kind of form a strategic partnership where, you know, we can lean on one another, you know, to deliver things. And within the first few weeks of Helix, I was able to call up, you know, two of those organizations and say, hey, do you want to partner with me? And even, you know, to the customer saying, hey, I'm going to partner with somebody else to do this. You know, they're comfortable as long as, you know, the product and the outcome is, you know, exceeds expectations. So this isn't all about Helix. It's about living in a, existing in a community, ecosystem, for want of a better word, with organizations that can work together to deliver, you know, the end product for the customer. So I'm very much looking forward to collaborating with companies like Helix to deliver a sort of high service.
Yeah, definitely. Sounds exciting. And I think another point I could talk about for ages, and we won't talk about it, but is that customer experience. I think, again, it's something that has come to the fore, I believe, over COVID, where it's always been, you know, in the US, for example, customer service is critical, isn't it? You know, everything you do is about customer service. Whereas in a lot of other regions, the customer experience has not always been as important as the end product. But I think a lot of clients now want the experience to be of a high level as well as the product.
Yeah, I mean, if you take, you know, white space fit out type work, which is, you know, the co-location data center is going up all over the world, huge in terms of scale. You know, the cloud service providers are, you know, building their own, everything needs fitted out. But generally, if you're engaged by a co-location company to fit out white space, they're not the actual customer, right? So, you know, the customer is generally, you know, a cloud service provider. So, you know, that company is placing its entire trust in you to deliver a product for them, you know, that exceeds expectations, it's on time, and it looks and feels like quality. So, you know, I'm aware that, you know, a lot of people place their trust in an organization to deliver further up the line for their customer or their customer's customer. So that experience and the feeling that, you know, it's a, you're a trusted partner, and you know, they've got everything invested in you delivering is a nice feeling to have, you know, to be trusted as an organization to deliver that.
Yeah, definitely. And before we kind of finish, there's another few key topics I wanted to cover with you before we close up. Otherwise, we'll talk all morning. But you've talked a lot about technology, innovation, and, you know, how the industry needs to change. But kind of what's your view on sort of how the data center looks today as to oppose how it will look in X amount of years?
I'm excited about what it could look like in X amount of years.
Take your pick on years.
Hopefully that X is a small number, not a big number. But I've recently had the conversation with an organization who are building co-location data centers, and aspirationally they want to build an autonomous data center today. It may not be autonomous because their customer or customers might not be ready for an autonomous data center, but they want to have the technology in the data center to enable it to be that when it comes. I spent a lot of time with an amazing team, by the way, at CBRE over the last 12 to 18 months, actually working out what does next generation data center operations look like? What kind of technology would you put in? You know, how would you ingest the data to pick up trends and patterns, and how do you drive predictability and reliability, use sensor technology a lot more? So I'm excited about, you know, what the next generation sort of data centers look like in operations. And I think without a doubt, COVID has absolutely influenced, you know, just people's openness to embrace different technology than they might have done 24 months ago. So that's another thing Helix is open to doing, is talking to organizations about, you know, an optimized operational strategy that, you know, leverages technology and gives predictability, reliability, you know. And down the line, there's no doubt that data centers will operate with less people in them, and, you know, technology that, you know, kind of fills some of that gap. So it's about a journey that really embraces technology and reduces the TCO. And, you know, that's the match. We're always going to need people. I think the edge network is going to drive that technology as well, because, you know, edge sites will be unmanned. They'll use technology, new technology, and people will realize if it can be done there with an on-demand workforce, then there's no reason why it can't be done, you know, in the data center.
And from a people perspective, because obviously I'm sure there's engineers listening to this thinking, well, if data centers are autonomous, what happens to me? But do you think that it'll work like that? So there'll be kind of an on-call and a remote workforce for a co-location developer, for example, or operator has X amount of engineers that work on a remote basis and are kind of called in, or is that how you see it in the future?
Yes. I mean, if you have a campus that's 200 megawatts, you clearly need some people on it just because of the sheer nature and scale of it. But I think when the technology is applied and people start, you know, we should have, if a UPS, for example, you know, fails, that there are absolute telltale signs in the telemetry and controls of that UPS. We don't monitor them today. We just monitor the fact that it's failed. So we need to get to a point where we're using technology and automation that tells us when something's going to happen. There's an impending failure, and that's when engineers will be engaged and dispatched to do it. I think the days of, you know, as I said, sending engineers on a plant walk around that takes 4 or 5 kilometers, it's just not efficient. It's not great for the engineer, and it's not great for the organization. So it will be a hybrid. We'll always need engineers, without a doubt. We need them to install it, commission it, test it, maintain it, you know. And as much as there'll be less need for actual engineers on site, the infrastructure is just multiplying by the week. So I don't think we'll ever have too many data center engineers. Certainly not in the next 5 to 10 years, that's for sure.
I couldn't agree more at that point. And it's a massive challenge at the moment to identify and, you know, retain, attract and everything engineers. You know, engineers is probably one of the hardest skills to recruit at the moment in the sector because of the demand and because of the skills actually required by the individual to be able to perform the role. And I'm sure that's something you were seeing when you were at CBRE as well.
Yeah, I mean, and that's back to the empowerment, you know, and working for somebody that values, because you're always going to be able to earn, you know, 10 bucks more working for company B if you want to change, and it's what you give the engineers. You know, I know an engineer who told me the story. He came up, like me, through the ranks. I've been a shift engineer and supervisor. And he said, I used to do night shift at, you know, this data center, and inevitably it was quiet. And he just committed to himself that he'd do a degree. And he managed to pretty much do a degree on the night shift of his data center operations. And hey, this guy, you know, now runs a region for CBRE, and it, you know, just... Yeah, you know, really leverage, you know, for engineers where you are and what you're doing, and, you know, choose where you want to go, and, you know, don't let anybody hold you back.
No, there's definitely a lot of opportunity out there to develop and progress in the industry at the moment. And on talent, I know CBRE do some amazing work on talent as well, but how do you think organisations can attract and retain talent in the industry? Because it is a challenge as it grows and grows and grows. And it's more important that we retain the people we've got, but equally that we do look to those other sectors to bring people in.
Yeah. I think the whole drive behind diversity and inclusion has been absolutely great. Opening the eyes, you know, of data center operators to other industries. I've had conversations with customers that specifically say, I want somebody from like the car industry, so that when they turn up, they've got a completely different perspective. The way they challenge things is completely different. So we've went from a must have data center experience to almost must not have data center experience, right? Which is amazing, because, you know, as well as the diversity pool opening up, it's complete diversity of thought and way of thinking to do it. In terms of retention of talent, you know, we spoke about it earlier on. It's making people feel, you know, empowered. You know, they've got a career, they're able to grow, you know, the company understands, you know, their aspirations and can support them on a journey. Because, you know, for Helix, it's unlikely we'll be able to compete, you know, sometimes with the salaries that, you know, hyperscale guys are paying because they've got a, you know, rapid growth and rollout. So, you know, from our perspective, we want people to feel, you know, part of the company. We want them to feel they've got a career, they're empowered. And it's inevitable that, you know, that you do lose people from time to time. And I'll never stand in anybody's way if it's from a career progression perspective. We've all changed companies, you know, we've all kind of moving forward. So I think sometimes it's even pleasing to see somebody, you know, take a new role with a new organization, a new challenge for themselves. And so retention is important. I think for me, it's if an individual is progressing in their career, it's something that, you know, you can smile about if you've helped them on that journey.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think it's important that as an organisation, like, you know, like you do, that you accept that and you appreciate that, but also that you work with those individuals to try and give them the career path they want. I think days gone by, it wasn't, you know, we didn't really consider that individual's future. We were looking at more, you know, we need someone to do this role today. Whereas now, definitely the younger generation, they do want that career path, you know, kind of planned out for them over the next 10 to 15 years, because they've got that aspiration to be successful. So it is really important that companies do offer that, to especially to the people that want it, basically.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's different, right? You guys know that. You're in the, you know, recruitment game. But yeah, if you can make somebody feel valued, they have a smile on their face, right? And generally, you know, they'll lean in where there's a problem rather than leaning out. And you know, they'll go home fulfilled, satisfied somewhat, you know, with what they're doing.
No, exactly. And the other point, and on that point as well, before we move on, is don't promote someone if they don't want to, because the amount of people we speak to that have gone from, I'll use engineer as an example, shift engineer to a shift lead, and they say, actually, I don't want the responsibility of a shift lead. I'd rather go back to a shift engineer. It's kind of have that conversation with them, you know, do that. Is this what you want? Because some people are promoted out of necessity rather than out of desire.
Yeah, and companies like CBRE have definitely been guilty, and that's not a criticism of CBRE. That's just, you know, criticism of a company that's growing. You have talented engineers who have aspirations. You know, moving from an engineering role to like a site manager role, which is generally the first step into management, they go from, you know, being in a team, knowing, you know, vast experience in, you know, the site, the infrastructure and what they do. And then they step into a management role at an outsourced site. They're now the most senior person on the site for the company, whether it's CBRE or JLL or whoever else. So they've got nobody around them. They don't work in an environment where they can lean in a load of people for help. And overnight, they have to become masters of managing people, managing a customer, managing procurement, QHSE. Like, it's finance, like it's huge. And, you know, we've been guilty in the past of promoting those people and then wondering, like, what, why are they not doing well? Like, what, like, what, what's happened here? So I think, you know, to your point, when people are promoted, I think they should always have like a buddy, a support system that allows them, you know, for 6 months or 9 months to be able to lean on, you know, a group of individuals or a team to just make that transition, because it's huge. It really is. And even, you know, astute managers who move from management to directors, it takes a personal and professional change to be successful in that new role. So
yeah,
we don't do enough of that type of coaching, I think, as an industry.
No, and I think it's across the board. I don't think that's industry specific. I think you see that in most sectors. It's the time spent with people once they're promoted. You know, you want to keep training and developing them in the role rather than just promoting them and leaving them to it. But again, that's exactly what you've just said, basically. And the last point, which is quite a big point, but we'll quickly cover it. Sustainability is obviously a massive challenge in the sector today, and everybody's talking about it. You know, what can we do as an industry to kind of manage the sustainability challenge, basically. But what do you think the sector can do to kind of ensure we achieve the targets that, you know, we've set ourselves over the next 10 years?
I think the sector's doing a lot right now, which is great. The fact that we're talking about it is great. The fact that it's on, you know, front of kind of mind on every data center organization. And it's not just, you know, how they buy their electricity or where they buy it from now. You know, people like Microsoft are trying to source, you know, concrete that's, you know, got a sustainable background or history. So I think, you know, manufacturers of equipment are creating things that are more efficient. Everybody's thinking like almost sustainability first, right? Whenever they embark on a project or an initiative or whatever, sustainability is front and center, whether it's in an RFP or, you know, RFI. It's just, it's great that everybody's taking it seriously from every aspect of, you know, what goes into a data center through to operation. So, and that's part and parcel of, you know, the next generation data center operations leveraging technology. It's not efficient to send somebody walking around the site for, you know, 2 hours or 3 hours. So I think that we've almost been, I think the last 24 months, been given like a booster all round in the industry about how we hire, the people we hire, you know, sustainability, technology. So I think we're probably seeing the, without a doubt, the biggest overall change in the industry in terms of how people think and do things than we've had in the last 10 years. So it's just how quickly, you know, we can sustain the pace of change. And I don't want to call it disruption because, you know, the data center is about, you know, managing risk and being resilient. So, but yeah, I think we're on a journey of efficiency and technology evolution.
No, exactly. It's an amazing industry to be in right now. Everything that's going on in it and all the conversations I have about innovation, technology changes, everything is just, it's a fascinating sector to be in, that's for sure. Finally, before we close up, I could talk all day, as I always say, but I've got one question I ask everyone on my podcast. If you could give one piece of advice to those looking to work in the sector, what would it be?
Yeah, I mean, it's the coolest sector in the world, right? You can be anything in it, from a, you know, procurement person to a legal person to a finance person to an engineer. I'm not sure how we reach them, Andy, and maybe, you know, it's organizations like you that help me. You know, I've got a large network and LinkedIn, as you probably do as well, but 80% of it is probably in this sector, right? So, like, I think there's some education that needs to happen that helps people like me, Helix, you know, people in co-location. How do you broaden the net so that, you know, the kids at school or university or other industries go, wow, you know, that's a pretty cool industry, and how do we make a better job at attracting them? Because it's the best industry in the world to work in. But I feel like there's not, you know, we can't get the kind of message out, if that makes sense.
No, and I could get on my soapbox on this one, but I won't. I'll briefly summarise it. I think the key is, and I always say that the key is taking your message to the people. I think what we rely on and what a lot of industries rely on is people coming to us. We feel that by talking about it, by sharing it on LinkedIn, like you say, you know, by doing all the marketing and whatever it is that organisation is doing to target people, we feel like that's enough. But you have to accept that the person you want to get is not already thinking about working in the industry. The people you want to get are the people that work in the automotive, manufacturing, aviation, MOD, whatever the sector is, those critical engineering sectors are in a sector that they're probably quite happy in, but they're not aware of the opportunities that the data centre sector offers. So it's about getting your message to those people and taking it to them, you know, whether that's physically going to see them or it's targeting your marketing at that sector.
No, without a doubt. I mean, I'm taking part in a capstone project this year, which has been a mentor for the scholarships in the US that are, you know, funded by iMasons. But that's, you know, a small group of people that we're enticing into the industry and helping them, you know, through colleges and university. But I'm gonna leave you to tell us this, you know, how we can make a better job of attracting, you know, talent into the industry.
Yeah, and it's totally on my radar, and it's one reason why I started the podcast in the first place. And what I do get is people messaging me saying, oh, I stumbled across your podcast, and actually, you know, I've now started to look for a career in the sector. So things like this do work, but there's definitely a lot more to be done at the school, college, university age. I totally agree with that point. And it's about, you know, going into those schools, and we've all got a place to put a part to play in that, is going into the schools and talking about it, you know, telling the kids what a data center is and how cool the industry is to work in. It's really doing that side of the attraction piece, which is probably something that the sector doesn't do very well or doesn't do a lot. That's not specific to data centers. You know, we've all been to school. How many times do you remember someone coming into your school and telling you about a career? It was very rarely, if ever. So it's definitely something we can all work on, and it's 100% on my radar. Anyway, we could, as I say, I could chat all day on that, and I'd better cut it off, because otherwise we'll go well into a couple of hours. But it's been great to have you on the podcast, learn about your career, obviously learn a lot more about AMS Helix and, you know, and what you're trying to do in the industry, which I think is really exciting, but also to cover some of the key points in the sector today. So I appreciate your time coming on today.
Andy, it's been an absolute pleasure. You know, everything we've kind of spoke about, I'm passionate about it. It's what makes me tick. So I've loved it. Thank you.
Exactly, which is why we need to cut it off, so all the listeners are not sat there for 2 hours listening to us talk. Anyway, I really appreciate your time, and we'll catch up again soon.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
Take care. Cheers.